The unbelievable truth is after this.
Tosca, they need you.
Need us? Sometimes I think they don't even like us.
Peter Flannery's series, Our Friends in the North, continues.
You've made a mockery of the law.
It's revenge for 74, isn't it?
Ending with a brand new episode, especially written for BBC Radio 4.
I know your granddad Tosca, you know.
Our Friends in the North.
Does this look like I've got things easy?
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. Continues this Thursday afternoon at 2:15.
Now on BBC Radio 4, it's time to join David Mitchell and the panel as they attempt to unearth more unbelievable truths.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. On this week's panel, we have four comedians, each one of them guaranteed to raise a laugh. So that's four laughs in the next half hour, minimum. Please welcome Milton Jones, Ria Lena, Chris McCausland and Lou Sanders. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Chris McCausland. Before becoming a successful comedian, Chris had a number of other jobs. Most recently, unsuccessful comedian. Chris once applied for a job at MI5. They eventually rejected him because of a perceived disability. He was from Liverpool. Chris, your subject is goldfish, small, gold or orange freshwater fish that are commonly kept as pets in ponds and aquariums. Off you go, Chris. Fingers on buzzers the rest of you.
To be honest, I hate goldfish with every atom of my being. I haven't got the time for any pet that costs less than a can of Coke. They've got two stomachs, even though they only eat dust. One for dust and one for partly digested dust.
Rhea.
Do they have two stomachs?
No.
Oh.
But on a brighter note, they can survive in milk for up to a week. But don't try this at home, as they are lactose intolerant and prone to depression, and this just exacerbates both.
Rhea.
You are milk. Can they survive in milk?
Electricity. Yes. The electricity tells me that Rhea buzzed first.
Oh,
the electricity never lies. So,
no, that's okay.
So, Rhea, you have
can
the first.
Can they survive in milk?
No.
I think you'll find Lou buzzed first.
Oh, goodness me. No, they don't. They can't survive in milk.
Why not?
It's water
it's
you want to put them in.
There's water in milk.
Yeah, there's water in milk.
There's
not goldfish in milk. But no, milk, it is, as you rightly say, milk is largely water, 87% water, but it's still not a suitable environment for goldfish to survive because the presence of lactose, fat and protein molecules reduces the amount of available dissolved oxygen. You fool!
So they drown even faster in, like, carbonated milk because that carbon dioxide would then suck even more of the
fizzy
I'm
milk.
Sorry, I'm
imagine.
Getting nerdy.
So
I'm
if
sorry,
you're looking to kill a goldfish, though, I think you can just slap it on the floor.
According to the dictionary, a male goldfish is called a twaddle, a female one a twiddle, and a pregnant one a twit. But in my opinion, all of them are twats.
Milton.
Twit.
Not true.
No, it's just talking to Chris.
All right.
Everyone starts off liking goldfish, but soon enough they come to their senses. Music producer Goldie's stage name was originally DJ Goldfish, whilst film producer Samuel Goldwyn went by the name Samuel Goldfish. Both of them went on to hate goldfish before, quite ironically, dying in entirely separate dust-eating incidents.
Rhea.
DJ Goldfish.
No, no. I'm not even going to justify it either.
In the 1990s, IBM released a pocket computer called the IBM Goldfish.
Lou.
Yeah, bloody hell, yeah.
The IBM Goldfish. Got,
yeah.
Did you have one?
Yeah.
They were shit, weren't they?
I didn't
and
have one.
And they never existed.
It worked underwater, but only had about 4 seconds of memory. Did you know that a goldfish's memory actually works up to 50% better in cold water than in warm water, which is why if you boil one, they forget to stay alive?
Rhea.
I know that goldfish memories are longer than you think they are. They're like 3 months, so let's go with the cold water thing as well.
Not true. There are no figures about this, and it's disputed whether goldfish thrive better in warmer or colder water.
You think they would have figured that out before the milk thing?
Yes, but what? I suppose goldfish could fall into milk. Mm. I'm imagining.
Or a cat gets a goldfish out of the bowl and thinks, I'm not going to eat this on its own. I'm going to...
Yes.
Going to put a bit of sauce on it. Yeah.
And that would be the first recipe ever devised by cat. Soup de poisson à la chat.
I was once at a fairground and bought one of those boil-in-the-bag goldfish.
Chris.
Milton was once at a fairground and bought one of those boil-in-the-bag goldfish.
True.
Lou.
True.
Is that really true, Milton?
No, of course not.
Sorry, Lou.
No, you
lose a point.
Goldfish can only see in black and white, which means that you should never leave the snooker on for them, as they find this very upsetting.
Lou.
I think they do find the snooker. No, I think they. I think they can only see in black and white.
No. They see more colours than humans.
What?
While humans only see in three main primary colours, goldfish are tetrachromate, seeing in four colours, red, green, blue, and ultraviolet.
Wow.
Goldfish are worse than humans at hearing, smelling, staring competitions, and eating babies. A blind goldfish will actually swim faster than a sighted goldfish, which is remarkable, really, considering their total ineptitude in operating a fully grown Labrador underwater.
Lou.
Does a blind goldfish swim faster?
No.
Have you done the study?
Blind goldfish swim slower than sighted goldfish. A report in 1976 revealed that's the same year as the big drought in the UK. So much was going on. drought here. They, you know, they appointed a minister for drought. Next day, started raining.
Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely true. Yeah. In those days, politicians were effective. Anyway, same year, a report revealed that one-eyed goldfish swim as fast as two-eyed goldfish, but blind goldfish are slower.
Okay.
They were once a traditional wedding anniversary gift from husbands to wives, which, I'll be honest, I'm all for bringing back, as I think the price point is excellent. In ancient Egypt, they were often buried alongside dead pharaohs, which I think we'll all agree is the best place for them. And John Prescott bought one for Tony Blair just to cheer him up. It didn't work. In conclusion, death to all...
We'll just hold that thought. Milton.
Were they buried with pharaohs?
No, they weren't. The ancient Egyptians didn't keep goldfish. Goldfish, which are essentially mutant carp, only started to be bred for their colour in 9th century China.
Were they given husband to wife?
You're absolutely right.
Oh, yes! Yay.
Yes, goldfish were first brought back to southern Europe in the early 17th century and became associated with good luck and fortune. There was a short-lived tradition of men gifting their wives a goldfish on their first anniversary as a symbol of the prosperous years to come. Chris.
Goldfish!
Thank you, Chris. And at the end of that round, Chris, you've managed to smuggle four truths past the rest of the panel, which are that goldfish are prone to depression. The second truth is that film producer Samuel Goldwyn went by the name Samuel Goldfish. And the third truth is that they're worse than humans at hearing. Goldfish are only able to hear low-frequency sounds. And the fourth truth is that John Prescott bought a goldfish for Tony Blair just to cheer him up. And that means, Chris, you've scored 4 points. A hotel in Belgium offers lonely guests the option to rent a pet goldfish for the night. That should do the job. Nothing less bleak than sitting in a hotel room on your own looking at a goldfish. In 2016, an Australian woman spent $500 on medical bills to save her $12 goldfish after it choked on a pebble. The $500 was mainly to cover the vet's time as he drove to the pet store, bought another goldfish, and then drove back just in time to say, "Saved it!" OK, we turn now to Lou Sanders. Lou, your subject is flowers, the seed-bearing parts of plants which are often scented and brightly coloured. Off you go, Lou.
Men are like flowers. They're often found outside garages. Or in the woods, sowing their seed. Elon Musk is trying to patent loads of different flowers to own them, so everyone's thinking, like, maybe flowers could be big this year.
Rhea.
Is Elon Musk trying to patent flowers because Monsanto's patenting the DNA of everything, so he's probably getting in on it?
No.
If it was, there'd be a scandal called Elongate.
Nintendo have bred their very own flower, the Super Mario Gold.
Rhea.
Yes.
True.
Yes. Yay!
It isn't called the Super Mario Gold, but they have bred their own flower, officially named the Pikmin flower. It was part of a marketing campaign for the 2001 strategy game, Pikmin. One reviewer commented, "When you are literally creating life just to promote a video game, you've officially entered the realm of megalomania. Stop playing God, Nintendo." I think that's an overreaction. I think. Lou.
15% of women in America send flowers to themselves on Valentine's Day, but most British women say they'd rather take the cash.
Chris.
I think women probably do send flowers to themselves on Valentine's Day, and I'm going to say maybe 15% of them in America.
Correct. Yes, as bleak as hiring your own companion goldfish in a Belgian hotel. In the US, more than 224 million roses are sent on Valentine's Day, with 15% of women admitting that they send themselves flowers.
Flowers tend to grow more quickly if you talk to them in a Geordie accent and do impressions of ITV celebrities.
Chris.
I think that they grow more quickly if you talk to them in a Geordie accent. I think it's probably some study that was done on the frequency of the voice, and Geordies are quite high, aren't they? So I think it was something like that.
You're very clever.
Yeah, he is clever because you're absolutely right. Yeah. Although I think, to be fair, Chris, you might overestimate how scientifically proper the study is.
Because did they only try a Geordie person?
What is this? Essex nursery owner Chris Bonnet created an experiment to find out if different regional accents influence plant growth by creating 10 groups of bedding plants, all with the same amount of sunlight, water and nutrients. Brackets, roughly. Then he and his staff would speak to the plants in each area in a different accent, with appropriate TV programs and songs also played. And it was the Newcastle group that flourished best, with these plants growing almost 10% more.
Humans share 35% of their genes with daffodils.
Milton.
I think they do.
Oh, God, damn!
Have you emailed them all the truth in advance? Yeah, that's absolutely right. 35% of their genes are daffodils. Yes, humans are 35% genetically similar to daffodils. We also share 25% of our DNA with all other existing life forms.
Oh.
So it's not really saying much, is it?
Genuine Hollywood flower shops include Back to the Fuchsia, Vase Attacks and Florist Gump.
Chris.
Florist Gump.
No.
Oh, no. I was going to go for the Back to the Future one, and I changed my mind last minute.
Milton.
Back to the Future.
No. Anyone want to go for Vars Attacks? No?
Vars Attacks.
Really? Oh, Chris, that was very good of you, but think about it. Mars Attacks is quite a minor film. No, there's no Vars Attacks, though there is a Back to the Future in Milton Keynes and a Forrest Gump in Glasgow. Mm. There's also an Austin Flowers in Islington, a Floral and Hardy in Barnet, nice. And a freelance florist in County Meath, Ireland, called the Lone Ranger. That's a good one.
Plant medicine has been proven, finally, not to work, and even plant-based laxatives have been poo-pooed. Just a silly, fun one. The naked man orchid gets its name because each petal resembles a naked man complete with a small penis. My favourite kind of man! Al Capone would always give you flowers just before he shot you so that you went out smelling something nice.
Milton.
Did he send people he was going to kill roses or flowers as if like a sign saying you're for it?
No, he didn't.
I thought not.
No. he sometimes sent flowers to people he had killed.
Oh.
To their funerals as a mark of respect. But not as a warning.
Oh,
but,
right. You
know, I suppose it's a sorry, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way. Yeah.
Or a power play. Yeah. Half sorry, half power play.
Sorry, not sorry, yeah.
I'm talking to you, Boris Johnson. And that's the end of Lou's lecture. And at the end of that round, Lou, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel. And that is that the naked man orchid gets its name because each petal resembles a naked man complete with small penis. Other plants with rude names include hooker's lips, sticky willy, nipplewort, knobweed, and stiff cock. This last a native of the Bahamas, whose leaves are claimed to be a herbal form of Viagra. And that means, Lou, you've scored 1 point.
Thank you.
The Latin name for the butterfly pea flower is clitoria, as the petals resemble a clitoris, and because it took botanists years to find it. Next up is Rhea Lena. Rhea, your subject is wood, a hard, fibrous substance that makes up the trunks and branches of trees. Off you go, Rhea.
The world's tallest bonsai tree is 15 meters high, but is a source of national shame in Japan, as is the Scots pine, so called because the grain is incredibly tight. Whereas the Norwegian spruce is a national treasure because it always looks nice to see it nice. In 2008, the National Toy Hall of Fame gave its oldest toy award to the stick. Nothing else could beat it.
Chris.
Yes, you can have a lot of fun with a stick. A stick and some dog poo. That's a whole afternoon in Liverpool. In Liverpool in the 80s. So, yeah, a stick.
You're right.
Whoa. Yep.
Yes. The National Toy Hall of Fame in New York comprises 77 toys. In 2018, they inducted the stick. In 2005, they added the cardboard box. In 2011, the blanket. And in 2021, sand.
Lord Sugar began his career in a South London timber yard selling lengths of pine planking. His sales boomed after a London-wide poster campaign that showed a grinning Alan Sugar with the caption, "I've got wood."
Lou.
I think he did start his career in a timber yard.
No, he didn't. No.
Wasn't it a pottery? And at the end, when they came out the oven, he said, "You're fired."
Items originally famously made from wood include Bunsen burners, condoms, and the Ericsson DBH Bakelite telephone. Items currently still made of wood include the Eiffel Tower, the transatlantic telegraph cable, and ladders of the San Francisco Fire Department.
Lou.
Right, look, I do think, actually, that the San Francisco Fire Department might have ladders made of wood.
You're absolutely right. Yes, the San Francisco Fire Department's 350 ladders are made of Douglas fir. Non-conducting wooden ladders are preferred because of the many high-voltage overhead cables in San Francisco.
And Swedish scientists have developed a transparent wood which can be used to make windows called cedar.
A woodpecker can change sex from male to female. Its tongue is wrapped around its brain, and as I learned in a Bill Murray documentary, famously relives the same thing over and over again.
Lou.
Sorry to keep buzzing in. I guess that's the game. But the tongue around the head situation.
Tongue around the brain. Woodpecker.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Having its tongue wrapped around the back of its brain helps protect the bird's brain from injury during high-speed pecking.
It's hardly strictly a wood fact, though, is it? It's about the biology of a bird.
Yes, but
it'd be like having a question about the respiratory system of the beaver, throwing in here.
I suppose...
Deviation.
But I would say the woodpecker is a very wood-associated bird, and the activity that the tongue is cushioning the woodpecker's brain from is wood-associated. That's what they're pecking.
So don't be a little bitch about it, OK?
A woodlouse can change sex from male to female. Its tongue is wrapped around its brain, and as I learned in a Bill Murray documentary, famously relives the same thing over and over again.
Chris.
A woodlouse can change sex from male to female, female to male.
Which one?
From what it was to what it wants to be. from male to female.
Correct. Yeah. Now, it can change sex, however, it doesn't happen voluntarily because it's caused by a parasitic bacterium which converts male woodlice into females.
In his will, actor Edward Woodward left an Edwardian hardwood sideboard to James Woods, who would have welcomed it, but he's allergic to wood.
Thank you, Rhea. And at the end of that round, Rhea, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that Swedish scientists have developed a transparent wood which can be used to make windows. Though not as clear as glass, it can still be used for windows in private spaces or semi-transparent walls. Sounds very clever. And that means, Rhea, you've scored 1 point. Jacob Rees-Mogg recently revealed that as a child, his nanny would hit him with a wooden spoon. Never mind. It's now the turn of Milton Jones. Your subject, Milton, is underground. Things situated, occurring, or operating beneath the surface of the earth. Off you go, Milton.
The London Underground was originally intended to terminate in Paris, but the French government refused to be connected to anywhere via Waterloo.
Rhea.
Yes, I think they wanted to go all the way to Paris with it originally, but then they hit water and went, ooh.
You're absolutely right.
Wow.
The creators of the first London Underground line over 150 years ago originally intended that it should extend out into Kent and ultimately via a channel tunnel to Paris. In the 1930s, the Underground's planners felt the tube network should have its own airport and intended to build one at Fairlop in Essex. But the scheme was abandoned at the outbreak of World War II.
From Oxford Circus tube station, it's not an easy journey to Wimbledon's Womble theme park. In fact, it's underground, overground... then a bit of a walk. When staff at London Zoo had to get a kangaroo with toothache to the dentist in Clapham, they took it on the tube. And a group of pigeons regularly boards the London Underground at Hammersmith and alights at Ladbroke Grove. They all have jobs high up in the city.
Chris.
I think that someone took a kangaroo on the tube.
No, they didn't. No. Rhea.
Do the pigeons regularly make that journey?
Yes.
Are they busking? They're busking, aren't they?
They're not busking, they're just eating chips. yes, according to London Underground historian Dr. David Lawrence, a group of pigeons have been observed regularly travelling on trains between Hammersmith and Ladbroke Grove and between Baker Street and Euston Square.
Please do not give to buskers, especially if they're pretending to be Jim Morrison and friends. Yes, please mind the doors. But what about other kinds of underground, I hear you say? Only one pirate is known to have buried any treasure underground, but it took ages to find because the map just said X marks the spot, lots of love, kiss, 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 kiss. A drunk man once found that you can't keep treasure that you find with a metal detector if it's already in the British Museum. The largest badger set ever discovered had 50 underground chambers, 178 entrances, and 879 metres of tunnels. They need this kind of cover because the only place they're naturally camouflaged is the middle of the road. Andrew Pugh, the man who patented... invented... the man who invented the tiny tubs of ice cream you can buy in theatres at the interval, was buried in a coffin with a little spade stuck on the inside of the lid.
Chris.
Why not? Yes. I think he had a sense of humour, and it was probably in his will that he wanted to be buried like that.
No.
Oh.
No. It's a nice idea, but there was no such tiny tub inventing Andrew Pugh.
There are hundreds of thousand-year-old underground tunnel systems in Bavaria, and nobody really knows who built them or what they're for. Once, engineer Ernst Herren was lost down there for 3 weeks, but he had been under a lot of pressure.
I remember going to a museum in Munich when I was a kid, and the basement of it is just a series of tunnels. Now, I don't know what it was exemplifying, but I'm going to go with there are random tunnels in Bavaria, and nobody knows why.
You're absolutely right. There are more than 700 underground tunnel networks in Bavaria, but nobody knows quite why, as there are no surviving written records. Archaeologists were surprised to find that the tunnels were almost completely empty and appeared to be swept clean, as if they were intended as abodes for spirits. Other theories include that they were built by elves as a home for gnomes. Weird. That they were escape tunnels from castles, hiding places from bandits, or dungeons for criminals. I think NATO needs to block them up. Milton.
The escape artist Harry Houdini has stayed underground now for 97 years and counting.
Lou.
Is that true if he's been dead for 97 years?
He's been dead for 96 years.
Oh!
Thank you, Milton. And at the end of that round, Milton, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that only one pirate is known to have buried any treasure underground. The only recorded incident of a pirate burying treasure is that of William Kidd, who's believed to have buried at least some of his wealth near Long Island to use as a bargaining chip to avoid punishment in New York for his piracy. It didn't work, and he was hung. And the second truth is that the largest badger set ever discovered had 50 underground chambers, 178 entrances, and 879 metres of tunnel, and a little book about the history of Munich. And that means, Milton, you've scored 2 points. Bigger even than the Grand Canyon, the longest canyon in the world, is a breathtaking 460-mile natural wonder hidden under Greenland's ice sheet. So, on the plus side, Greta, that will at least be fun to see. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 3 points, we have Rialina. And in joint first place, with an unassailable minus 1 point each, it's this week's joint winners, everyone else. Lou Sanders, Chris McCausland and Milton Jones. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Lou Sanders,